All right, well, should we just do it?
I guess. We'll do it.
Let's do it.
All right.
Are we recording? Have we been recording this whole time?
Yes.
Perfect.
Yes.
Great. You got the burrito.
All of it.
Some good chit chat in there.
Yes.
We can edit that out, right?
The story that we're posting Thursday was talking about my daughter's Halloween costume. And keep in mind, she's 11 months old and she loves dogs. So she like crawls around and barks.
Oh my God.
I was hoping she was going to be walking. So her dad picked out a chicken costume so she would be waddling around. Well, she's Aww. So stubborn. And when you try to hold her hands for her to walk, she'll just go jelly leg. So I'm like, I'm going to have a crawling, barking chicken. So yeah, that's what we were talking about. And I'm like, if a barking crawling chicken had a like look, it would be me right now. So that's why I was like, we gotta mute this and take the camera off until we're ready.
I went home and put makeup on. I got lucky. I feel like ass. I had a COVID test and it was negative. I was going to say I passed, but I don't know. Like, that's a good thing. Negative
is
good.
We did that a couple of weeks ago. I'm like, and she failed, or did she pass? She doesn't have it, so that's good.
She doesn't.
I was like, I don't know how to.
Are you guys having to wear masks and everything still everywhere?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to say here, like, bars and everything are open already.
Yeah, everything's pretty much open. It's just you have to wear masks everywhere.
And alcohol is cut off at 11.
What?
Yeah.
We went to the bar a few weeks ago and they changed it to where you pay $8 to get in and that covered you with a hot dog. And then that was like they're operating under a food. So then you just did whatever you wanted when you got in there. But you had to pay for a hot dog.
Yeah. So how are the murders right now during COVID? Are murderers out murdering right now?
Sword and Scale did a whole thing. I don't think it's murder, but there's like higher crime rates. Gordon Scale did an episode a few weeks ago.
Because we got looters and shit, but
yeah.
Well,
and domestic abuse.
As Kenan says, somebody gets shot here every day. So I guess there's still murderers.
Like, where are we? Exactly?
South Carolina.
I don't think I would have like imagined South Carolina to be a dangerous state.
There's always shootings there.
On the way to Oklahoma, she was like, "Do you hear about that shooting in Murder Beach?" And I was like, "No." And then on the way, as we were getting ready to leave, I was in Oklahoma for 2 weeks. And Keenan's like, "There's a shooting in Myrtle Beach," and I'm like, "It's Murder Beach, first of all." And they just had one.
It's at least once a week down there.
That's scary.
Oh my God.
It's bad.
I was thinking that would be really pretty to go see, but maybe not.
No, go to Charleston.
There's not so much weird. Like excitement in Charleston, but you won't die.
I won't get shot. Well, that's not exciting at all.
We've done a couple of stories in Myrtle Beach that end up either missing or dead.
Dead.
So. All right. Well, I guess we can start.
So we are going to tell you about a triple homicide that happened on Halloween.
Oh, yeah. Happy Halloween.
Yeah, exactly. First thing in the morning, too. It is in Sandusky, Ohio. And on October 31st of 2010, a 16-year-old named Devin Griffin gets home from his church service. He says the house was quiet, so he just assumes everyone's asleep. He lives there with his mom, Susan, who's 46, his stepdad, William, but he goes by Bill, and he's 53, and then his brother, Derek, who is 23. He has another stepbrother, but he doesn't live at the house, and his name is William also, but he goes by BJ, and he is 24, and that is Bill's son, and as far as I know, his only son.
You know, I didn't hear anything about the kid's mom in any of, like, the other podcasts I was listening to.
Of this one?
Yeah, of... let's call him BJ so we don't confuse the Willie.
I don't know anything about BJ's mom. So Devin thinks everyone's still asleep. He goes up to his room just to play some video games. And he says that around 1:30 on Halloween afternoon that he realizes that everyone is, that the house is still quiet. And that's super strange. He says his mom is usually up doing stuff around the house. So he goes downstairs to look for everyone, and he goes to his parents' bedroom to find them still in bed with their comforter covered up over their heads. It was a maroon comforter. I don't know why that's important, but it was in every single article.
Maybe because it covered up the bloodish.
Well, I also heard that they were partying the night before, so that's why he was just like,
oh, I'm getting there.
Oh, sorry.
Wow.
Wow. This is why I'm just like, I'm printing it. She's like, don't read it. I'm like, don't worry.
Okay. Okay, continue.
Gosh. So, thank you.
I didn't say anything.
So Devin at first thought it was a Halloween prank. I guess that his parents were pretending to be asleep or pretending to be dead and that they would just pop up and scare him. I wouldn't
mean. Guys, it's not a joke.
We're really dead.
So he starts talking to his mom and then walks over to her side of the bed and he taps her leg that's hanging out of the covers. He pulls the comforter down just a little bit and that's when he realizes that it's not a prank because he says that he saw the bloodstains on the pillowcase and then he ran out of the house in a panic and called his aunt who then called 911. I have never understood that. Why can't you just call 911? Why do you call someone else to have them call 911?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess if you're too much in a shock, you don't know what to say or do.
Yeah,
or
I guess.
Call somebody else and then they're like, because remember when we lived together and me and my neighbor were out, you were probably asleep or something. I don't know. But me and our neighbor went outside and we were sitting there and we're just like, oh my gosh, the dumpster's on fire. Yeah. And so we run over to the landlord in the middle of the night. We're like bang on her door and we're like, the dumpster's on fire. And they're like, call 911. And we're like,
I mean, I guess you don't really know what you would do in that situation.
So that's the only reason I would kind of defend that is because I'm like,
and he's
I don't know.
So maybe he really just doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, I was saying, he's young.
I guess I'll allow it.
So, I guess you kind of have to, but you know,
it did happen already. Yeah. So
the police get there and what they found was they called it a grisly, gruesome crime scene. They said that both Susan and Bill had been shot to death in their bed. Bill was shot 5 times in the head and face at a very close range. They said within 1 to 2 feet. He was laying in a natural sleeping position, suggesting that he was shot first while he was asleep. Susan was found sprawled out a little more awkwardly, and that suggested that she had woken up to the gun, to the first gunshot, or that she had been moved afterwards. She was shot 3 times at close range. They said that she was also sexually assaulted, but it was not clear if it happened before or after being shot. And both were shot with a small caliber gun, most likely a .22. The police went upstairs to check everything else out, and they found Derek's bedroom door closed and locked. They knocked and had no response, so they busted it in. They found Derek curled up in bed facing the wall, and they said he suffered from blunt force trauma to the head, and they believe he died within minutes of the first blow. And they found a bloody claw hammer in the house that was consistent with Derek's wounds. So I had to look up a claw hammer because I thought it was something fancy, but it turns out it was just a plain hammer. So,
like, is it the backside where it's?
I guess
that's what I.
But that, like, when I googled,
pull out the nail.
I guess, yeah. But it's just a claw hammer. And when I googled it, it was just a normal hammer. Okay. So,
yeah, with a hammer.
Yeah.
Got it.
The police suspect, but he was hit. How many times did I say? It didn't say, but it was multiple times. And they said he just died within minutes of the first one. So he was still like alive for the other ones.
Yeah.
They automatically suspected Bill's son, BJ. And they found him within an hour of finding the Liskey family at the family's hunting cabin. And I was thinking, why would they automatically assume it was the son? So I'm going to tell you. Apparently, it wasn't the first time the police had been called to the house to deal with BJ. He was known for his moody and violent behavior to the point where neighbors suspected him of killing their own animals. And BJ's behavior apparently worsened when his parents divorced and then worsened even more when Bill and Susan got married in 2001. In 2002, BJ was living at home with Bill and Susan and his stepbrothers, Derek and Devin. Bill had to call the police because BJ was starting to harm himself, and he was also on house arrest at that time, but I couldn't find out why. When the police arrived, BJ attacked the officers that were there trying to help, and he was charged in juvenile court with assaulting a peace officer. Then, in 2004, BJ got in a fight with Susan and hit her in the chest. 2 months later, he was charged with a felonious? All right. Felonious.
I think so. But what does that mean?
Like a felony. Like a felony assault, but it said felonious, so... Okay. So he's charged with that assault and robbery because he hit Susan with a coffee cup and then took her keys, her car keys, and he was found incompetent to stand trial and the charges were dropped. And Bill finally kicked BJ out when he was 18 because once again he tried to attack Susan, this time while she was in the shower. After moving out, my dogs are fighting out there. I just hear tumbles.
I wondered what that was.
Yeah, they're roughhousing.
just again, that's right.
So he had numerous encounters with the police after moving into a group home. One in particular was with his dad while he was there visiting. So he like attacked his dad there. In 2006, Bill filed for guardianship over BJ and put him in like a mental health facility. So he was diagnosed in 2007 with schizoaffective disorder, bipolar type. And I had Aaron look it up because I knew what schizophrenia and bipolar is, but I don't know what a schizoaffective bipolar is. So what is that?
Okay. So I have a few things here. A schizoaffective disorder is cycles of severe symptoms are often followed by periods of improvement. Symptoms may include delusions, hallucinations, depressed episodes, manic periods of high energy. But when I read that and also heard in a podcast, they were saying that he was usually like really depressed and down and never energetic. So I was kind of like, I guess they could all be different. Belief that an ordinary event has special and personal meaning, delusion, thought disorder, racing thoughts, thoughts of suicide, false belief of,
superiority?
Yeah. Their mood means they have anxiety, euphoria, hopelessness, limited range of emotions, loss of interest or pleasure in activities or mood swings, which sounds like Amanda. No. I want to say, which sounds more like him from what I heard about how his brother described him. And then I looked up all the other things. So I was like, what is the difference between schizoaffective disorder and regular schizophrenia?
Yes.
All these hard words.
You did it.
It says also people with schizoaffective disorder can have a wide variety of different symptoms, including having unusual perceptual experiences, hallucinations, delusions, mood swings, low motivation, inability to experience pleasure, and poor attention. And people with schizophrenic disorder have, oh, that's the same thing.
So they're the same thing?
Hold on. Yeah, it says the same thing.
Okay.
Psychiatrists do not know what causes schizoaffective disorder, but do know that you have a chemical imbalance in your brain and if you have the condition. Research shows that the genetic and environmental factors can increase your risk of developing this illness.
Okay.
So they don't really know how you get it.
I did read that when he was on his medication, he was really good, but that he would start feeling really good. So he'd stop taking his medication again. So he'd just be like, oh, I'm good. So now I'm done.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I was reading more about it being bipolar. It just means that they're more depressed than a regular schizophrenia. So that's it. If they're bipolar, means they're just more depressed. And it comes and goes in like weeks. It's like you maybe went away for like 2 weeks and then the next 2 weeks you're totally different.
Mm-hmm. All right then.
So that's sketchy.
So his dad never gave up on his son despite all the stress and him even attacking his wife. That's unconditional love if I've ever heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And a week before the murders, Bill took BJ deer hunting. They just got back the night before BJ decided to kill everyone. They returned home that Saturday night from hunting and had a big get together with all of the neighbors and like around them. And according to the neighbors, everyone had a good time. Derek wasn't there, but that apparently wasn't unusual because him and BJ didn't get along. But everyone had a good time and they said that everything was fine. And Bill had drank a little bit too much and didn't feel comfortable driving BJ back to his home, to his group home. So he made a bed for him on the couch. And then a neighbor reports hearing what sounded like gunshots around 6:30 a.m., but never called and like never checked into it. So Devin spent the weekend at his dad's house, and that's pretty much the reason that he's not dead. He came home that Sunday, Halloween morning at 9:30 a.m. to change for church. He said he was there for about 5 minutes, but he did see BJ, who Devin said was actually acting happier and even asked where Devin was going and how long he would be gone. And Devin said that BJ was normally slow and glooming, and that morning he was very upbeat and talkative. BJ was picked up at first only charged with his father's murder. I couldn't figure out why, but they only charged him at first with that one. And they put him on $1 million bond. Eventually they charged him with all three, and he was charged with 3 counts of aggravated murder. And he was held on a $3 million bond, $1 million for each person. In exchange for the guilty plea, BJ was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. And at the trial, BJ said this: "I loved my dad very much, and it makes me feel very sick every time I think about what I did. I can't really explain why this all had to happen, but I think most of all it had to do with my mental illness." In 2015, BJ was found inside his cell at Ross Correctional Institution, dead from a self-inflicted injury. So he literally only stayed in prison for like 4 years.
Did you remember finding out how he killed himself?
No, the only thing I could find was a self-inflicted injury. It doesn't say like if he slit his wrist or anything like that.
I think he really was crazy.
I mean, yeah. I read in one article something about Satan, but I couldn't find anything to back it up.
I was going
to
say, I heard that too.
Yeah, so it was like mental illness and Satan. And I was like, I only saw it one time, so I don't know if Satan had a role in it.
So my friends, they're like, all mentally ill people are
the devil can make you do anything.
Today's episode is presented by Wild CBD Products. Wild produces the best tasting edibles on the market. They use real fruit and all natural flavors, with flavors inspired by the Pacific Northwest, high ingredient, real fruit, and consistent dosing. Wild's new CBD line offers real fruit infused gummies in blackberry, huckleberry, lemon, and raspberry. And the CBD infused sparkling water is in raspberry, lemon, blackberry, and blood orange. Each gummy is dosed with 25 milligrams of CBD and can be purchased in a bottle of 10 or 20. Wild is offering our listeners 30% off of their next purchase at wildcbd.com. That is wyldcbd.com by using our code POD for 30% off your next order. Wild CBD products are intended for individuals 18 or older. Wild CBD products should only be consumed as directed on the label and should not be used if you are pregnant or breastfeeding. All Wild CBD products are made with ingredients containing zero THC. Consult with a health professional prior to using Wild CBD in combination with any medicine.
So the top part says,
I'll read the top part then. Normally we do not cover cases that involve kids. Like that's just like what we both agreed on. We both have kids. So we're like, we don't want to cover cases about kids, but this one does involve a kid. So it's like, we're, you know, doing it this week.
But
I love that when we first started this, you're like, I think I'm going to do this.
And then, but you left out half of that. With this case, as a reminder to check all of your kids' Halloween candy. So you have to put why you're like, okay, I'm going to take back. There's a reason.
Okay.
Anyways. All right. So this happened in Deer Park, Texas in 1974. On Halloween night, Ronald O'Brien and one of his neighbors, Jim Bates, took their 3 kids out trick-or-treating. Ronald was the one to walk the children to the door while Jim stood back.
Already, you're one sentence in.
Well, I'm like, she's staring at me, and I feel like I'm on the spot.
Making sure you're reading everything exactly how she wrote it.
Yes, I'm like the judge right now.
Look at you.
Like, literally, I'm so ADD. Like, if I'm not reading, I have to be on my phone. Like, and she won't. And I'm like, you're supposed to be me. You're supposed to be doing something else, not staring at me. But
just need your drink. You read, you drink. Don't look at each other.
All right. So while Jim stood back for when the kids took off running to the next house, one of the houses they stopped at, the kids knocked and knocked, but no answer. The kids were too excited to wait, so they ran off to the next house. Ronald caught back up with a group a few minutes later, holding several 20-inch long pixie sticks. He told the kids that someone finally opened the door and he handed them the pixie sticks for the kids. He gave each kid a pixie stick and then gave the last pixie stick to a boy they knew from church that was out trick-or-treating. That was a lot of pixie sticks. I said that so many times. Shortly after getting on to the second street, it started to rain, so they decided to call it a night and head home. Ronald told his two kids, Timothy and Elizabeth, that they could have one piece of candy before bed. Timothy wanted the giant pixie stick. He had a hard time opening it, so he asked his dad for help. Timothy tasted a little bit of the pixie stick and said it was bitter. So his father gave him what?
I said it was cocaine.
When I was like literally like looking over reading it, that's what I thought. Like, they done drugged that kid.
Drugged that kid.
So his father gave him some Kool-Aid to wash down the taste and then sent him to bed. Literally, when I read that, I thought, just gave him a pack of Kool-Aid. Like,
here's you a packet.
The pixie stick don't taste good. Here's a pack of Kool-Aid. Maybe this will taste better. It wasn't long, though, before Timothy was in the bathroom throwing up. He started, what?
Convulsing.
His dad held him as they waited for the ambulance to arrive, but Timothy died in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. Less than an hour after having his pixie stick and Kool-Aid. Soon panic started to set in with everyone because they believed someone poisoned the candy. Parents were bringing all the candy into the police station to be tested. This makes sense now why they always post, like, check your kids' candy, and they'll have, like, the sneakers with a gun sticking through. I mean, like, the most...
A gun?
Have you never seen
no, that? No, I've seen, like, a razor blade, not no, a gun. No.
It's, like, the bizarre, like, joking around, and it's literally... Let me find it, because it's literally, like, a fun-size sneaker with a gun, and be like, watch your kids' candy.
In the candy.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a Twix.
You misled me, okay?
I know. Please check your children's candy. This was just found in a Twix.
Get out! I have these.
So that is what I'm talking about. Like the joke. Check your kids' candy for the gun. That's not funny. This is a serious story.
He just died, and we're laughing about it.
After the autopsy was performed on Timothy, they found a lethal dose of potassium
cyanide.
Thank you. In his system, the officers took the pixie stick and tested it for the content. The results came back also positive for
cyanide.
Officers were working quickly to find the other pixie sticks before someone else ate one. The officers got the other ones back from Ronald and his wife,
I've heard it pronounced different ways. I really don't know how it's pronounced.
Okay. We'll call her D. They also received the two from Jim's kids, but they needed to get the last one the boy Ronald handed it to. When they arrived at his house, the parents were freaking out. They searched their son's bag of candy, but the pixie stick was not in the bag. His mom ran upstairs to their son's room where he was sound asleep holding the pixie stick. Oh, boy.
No.
It appeared he tried to open the pixie stick, but couldn't and fell asleep. Officers asked Ronald who gave him the five pixie sticks, and he told the officer he couldn't remember. I think it was Ronald.
I was going to say, didn't this guy hand them out to all the children?
Yeah, and now he can't remember?
And were they so hard to open because, like, he resealed
them? Super glued them?
Yeah, they were, I think it says later on, but they were stapled, like a legit staple at the top.
Yeah. Well, I guess if it's like those big plastic ones.
Oh, those
like,
ones are hard, the big ones.
Yeah.
There was a 20-inch ones too, so that's probably what it was.
Okay.
Deal. Maybe he was in shock with everything going on, and his brain was fog, and he couldn't think straight. That's a little convenient. Since they went to two streets before... What, only two streets?
They went to two streets. They only went to two houses, or two streets, and then it started raining, so they said, call it a night.
Okay, you would think after two streets, you would remember where the pixie sticks came from, but okay. Officers went to all the homes, and none of the residents have given out large pixie sticks. But we already solved this murder.
Yeah.
We already know.
We're done.
We already
know. Like I tell Leslie all the time, we should be detectives. The officers then asked Ronald to walk with them and see if he could remember which house gave him the candy. After the third trip around, investigators were getting extremely frustrated. Finally, Ronald took them to the house that he got the candy from on Halloween. He told the story how the owner only opened the door just a little and handed out the candy. Is the person's arm was hairy? That's kind of odd.
Was it like COVID and they're like 6 feet apart? No. Here you go. Oh,
don't touch me
with my hairy arm.
They quickly learn that the owner of the home, wait a minute. He said, this is the house.
He said, this is the house with that guy with the very hairy arm.
So wouldn't he have told them the first time, and no, they would have been like,
click the first two,
just stick your arm
times.
Out. Just stick your arm out. Let me see.
Does this arm look correct to you?
They quickly learn that the owner of the home, Courtney Melvin, who was an air traffic controller, and he didn't get home. So it's a girl or a boy?
It's a guy. His name was Courtney.
Okay. Sorry, Courtney. But he did not get home until 11 p.m. on Halloween night. Hence, he didn't answer the door. His wife and daughter were home that evening, but ran out of candy before the kids reached the door. That's why the lights were out and no one answered the knocks. Courtney had over 200 to confirm that he was at work during this time, so it was quickly ruled out that he wasn't involved. So I wonder if they checked his arm and
they said, oh, nope, no hair.
And then they're like, all right, we'll check the job just to make sure. All right, that's a double confirmation, however you would say that. And then they're like, all right, he's out. All of the candy was tested positive for
Santa.
I'm glad you were just like pronouncing it for me before I even have a chance. The lab determined that someone had cut off the tops and filled about 2 inches worth of the poison in each candy. Then they resealed the tops with a heavy-duty staple.
Stupid.
Timothy's pixie stick contained enough
cyanide
to kill 2 adults.
What?
He has only had for 2 adults, but the other
kids had like way more poison.
Enough poison.
Yeah, enough poison to kill like 3 to 4 kids.
Yeah, and all the other kids had 3 to 4.
Where do you even get cyanide?
Tractor Supply.
No, I'm just kidding.
What? Is that like
I think we say in here where he gets it.
But I really
I don't know where we get it to now, like in today's time.
Well, let's not tell it before Halloween starts. A few days after Timothy's funeral, the O'Brien's insurance agent called the police. He felt that things weren't right and someone needed to know. The insurance agent said that Mrs. O'Brien didn't know about the policies that her husband had taken out on their children. But the new policy was taken out right before Halloween. So why is he going to kill other kids? So the police decided to look at Ronald. They soon discovered that he was over $100,000 in debt. Their car was repossessed. Their home was foreclosed. Do you want to read your fun fact or do you want me to? Or your not so fun fact?
The not so fun fact is he was telling all his coworkers at the Texas State, whatever.
Optical?
Yeah, there you go. See, we're helping each other out. And that he was about to come into a large sum of money soon.
He was bragging about it.
Yeah. So he was just like, you know, I'm about to come in all this money, da 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 da, like just bragging to all his coworkers.
I'm sorry, but I would, for no amount of money, kill my daughter.
No.
Like, that's, no. Ronald was not the stable man that he tried to portray. In fact, in a 10-year time frame, he had over 21 jobs. As the evidence was adding up against Ronald, officers went and talked to the people that knew Ronald. When they talked to co-workers, one co-worker told the officer that Ronald had asked them if just anyone can purchase the potassium cyanide.
Cyanide.
Did I say it right?
Yeah, of course. Did it!
Enough, like, pounding it in my head. They talked to a professor at his Harris County Community College where he had went. Ronald asked how much poison it would take to kill a certain size small animal. A local witness came forward saying Ronald came into his workplace right before Halloween, a wholesale chemical store, asking to buy the cyanide. I said that wrong, didn't I?
No, you said it right.
Oh, see, when I think I say it wrong, I say it right. When he was told the smallest amount he could purchase was 5 pounds, he left without buying anything. I feel like 5 pounds is a lot. Yeah. That's powder, right?
Yeah. And it's sugar.
Oh, sugar's a pound.
So what did he do with the rest of it?
I don't know. But he didn't even get the 5 pounds. And that was the smallest amount he could get was 5 pounds. So I guess he didn't want, like, that amount and get busted. Yeah, I read that too. Like, oh, he wanted more than 5 pounds. And I'm like, that's a lot. No, that was the smallest amount he could purchase, and he didn't want it. A search of the O'Brien's home was conducted. Investigators found pieces of pixie stick tops along with a pocket knife with traces of the plastic and the candy on the blade. He didn't even clean up after himself. He knew.
Sloppy.
That meme. Watching the murder documentary, and it's like they left their fingerprints on the doorknob. You dumbass!
After the call from the insurance, officers searched any policies that the kids were on. In January 1974, two policies were taken out on the kids, one for $10,000. Then a month before Halloween, he took out an additional $20,000 on each kid. Then the day before Timothy died, another $20,000 policy was taken out. How does that work, taken out?
Like, he was calling the insurance company saying, hey, I want to open, like, a life insurance policy for this kid for this amount.
So he just kept upping it?
Yeah.
Right.
He had two kids.
Okay.
Yeah, so he would just keep calling saying, I want to get a $10,000 policy. I want to get a $20,000 policy. I want to get another $20,000 policy.
For each one.
Yeah. So that's on our next line. That would be a total of $50,000 on each kid, or $100,000 if they both ate the candy, which would be $264,000 for each kid now. And so what, the policy would have went up by the year 2020?
No, like the year, like the money inflation.
Yeah. So it'd be a little bit more now, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. So they get that yearly?
No. She's not good with math.
So I am good with math. I'm not good with life insurance math.
But this is what he would have got.
Yeah.
In like the end. 70s, this right? is, if it would have happened now, that's what he would have got.
Oh, like the Winchester house where it started in this, but
yeah.
It was like $1,000 a day, and this time was like $24,000. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Money value goes up.
Sorry, you just put so many facts in here.
So many facts.
The next morning after Timothy died, Ronald called the insurance company asking for his money.
Like, hey, my kid died. Can I get that money? Like, when are you going to send that check?
Isn't that something like the funeral home does? Like,
I don't know who does it. I've never.
I don't think the next day I'm going to be like, I need my money. Like, I don't think that's going to be the thing that crosses my mind until I'm like trying to pay for a funeral.
They have to wait for a death certificate and all that fun stuff to make sure it's not like suicide or whatever.
Yeah. I just.
How you get it?
No, if you have a life insurance policy, my understanding, at least here in Texas, if you kill yourself, like, my life sucks, but I want to like leave behind something good for my spouse. Like, if you kill yourself, it like null and void your life insurance.
I think the same here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you can't kill yourself just to get money. Can't be like, I'm gonna kill myself and my spouse gets $100,000 for my gambling debt. Like, you can't.
That's true.
Yeah,
somebody in debt wouldn't kill himself anyway. I'd kill their kids, obviously,
to pay it off for their
like
wife.
I couldn't imagine, like, psycho. Then on November 5th, 1974, so we were in January.
We were Halloween night.
Yeah, and then it went to January.
Did it go to
January? Of the next year.
No, we were talking about January of that year when he pulled out the first.
Yeah, okay. I knew we were somewhere in January. Yeah,
he took out the insurance policy in January.
I wonder how long he had been planning on trying to kill his kid.
He's dumb, so it can't be that long.
Like, he could have tried and be like...
He at least... He's possibly the beginning of that year.
Yeah, January of 1974.
He took out additional policy. And then before. So possibly 10 months he was scheming.
Okay.
Then on November 5th, 1974, Ronald was arrested on one count of capital murder and four counts of attempted murder. He pled not guilty to all charges. Well, we all know you're guilty, so it doesn't matter. The trial started on May 5th, 1975 in Houston, Texas, where he still claimed that he was innocent. The DA on the case, Mike Hintemade, Mike H. Sorry if I say it wrong. We were all shocked that someone could kill their own son, their own flesh and blood, for money. $50,000 life insurance policy. The prosecutor had a lineup of witnesses that showed the path that O'Brien took in killing his son, Timothy. The chemist who worked with Ronald testified that he asked how much fatal. The summer of 1973. So a year before.
Yeah.
So now he was asking and. The summer of 1973. The chemical supply salesman testified that he wanted to purchase cyanide from him, but the quantity wasn't the size that Ronald wanted. A friend of the co-worker close to Ronald said in months before the death, he showed the unusual interest in cyanide and that he was always talking about how much it would take to kill someone. The neighbor who gone trick-or-treating with Ronald testified telling the court what happened after they returned back to his house. What happened when they got back to
his house? Well, just keep
going. Oh, I was like, did I miss that part? Jim said his son wanted to open the pixie stick that Ronald handed him earlier, but Ronald jumped over the coffee table and grabbed it from Jim's son's hand. He was saying something about it being too much sugar at night. Okay, so you're going to save somebody else's.
But not your own.
Mm-hmm.
So why did he give it to him in the first place?
I guess not to be so suspicious that you gave it to your kid.
I guess it's like, oh, just my two can have these. You, Kate.
Okay. Ronald's sister-in-law and brother-in-law testified at the funeral for Timothy. Ronald was talking about going to take an extended vacation and purchase some items he wanted with the insurance money. That's sick.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It only took 46 minutes to convict Ronald of murder and only 71 minutes to agree to the death sentence. In prison, inmates referred him as the Candy Man, and not in a good way. As a child killer, he was not very popular in prison. He appealed his case several times, going as far as the Supreme Court, but all the appeals were rejected. Ronald Clark O'Brien died by lethal injection on March 31st, 1984, but he did not leave this world without trying to get some last-minute petty, whatever. What is about to transpire in a few moments is wrong. However, the human beings do make mistakes and error. This execution is one of those wrongs. Yet it doesn't mean our whole system of justice is wrong. Therefore, I would forgive all who have taken part in any way in my death. Also, to anyone I have offended in any way during my 39 years, I pray and ask you for forgiveness, just as I forgiving anyone who offended me in any way. To my loved ones, I extend my undying love. To those close to me, I know your hearts. I love you one and all. God bless you all, and may God's best blessing be always yours. Ronald C. O'Brien. P.S. During my time here, I have been treated well by all TDC. During the execution, a crowd of over 300 people gathered outside the prison, cheered with some yelling, trick or treat, and others throwing candy at the anti-death penalty demonstrators. Ronald O'Brien is buried in the Forest Park East Cemetery in Webster, Texas. I couldn't find much about his wife and daughter during my Google, but Miss O'Brien maintains she was unaware of her husband's plans. She divorced him soon after testifying against him. She later remarried and adopted Elizabeth and still lives in the area. Elizabeth has a family of her own now, and she has put that in the past. So you just said you didn't find much of it, but you know they're living well. She divorced them. Now Elizabeth has a family of her own. Like, that's a lot of information.
Shush up.
Okay.
Well, I don't understand why he killed one kid but not the other.
Because she didn't pick the candy, I guess.
I don't know. Like, I don't understand.
I don't remember him saying anything about her getting a pixie stick.
She got one,
but she, it didn't say what she,
like, she ate a different piece of candy. Yeah, because he's like, you can have one piece of candy each. The boy chose a pixie stick.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just said that Ronald told his two kids, Timothy and Elizabeth, they could have one piece of candy before bed. Timothy wanted the giant pixie stick and had a hard time opening it, so had asked his dad for help. But it didn't say what she got.
I don't know what candy she
got. She got a Twix with a gun in it.
That's awful.
Yeah.
That is so funny. Now I don't want to go trick-or-treating.
Yeah. So check your candy.
Check your candy.
How are you supposed to know with a pixie stick? Like, are you supposed to taste it?
Well, if it has a staple on the top, I would say just trash it.
I'm just going to, like, buy my child her own candy and be like, trick or treat.
Yeah. Right.
Like, when you're about to go to a door, just be like, here, let me throw some candy in there.
Let me
get
that for you.
Good.
Like, well, they say that you're supposed to look and see if it's been, like, resealed in any way. People can buy those, like, resealers.
Yeah.
See if it looks like it's been remelted. A lot of investigation.
Right.
A lot of work for some damn Halloween
candy. Something. It's like, let me just go to the store.
I'm just gonna buy multiple kinds, and we'll just throw a Halloween party and call it a night. I'll give you your own candy.
I don't get it. Yeah, it's awful. Well, then there was actually that people putting razor blades in, like, apples and shit.
Yeah.
Why?
You know,
Jake's people.
Evil. I mean, you have nothing better to do with your life. You're not even going to see the outcome.
I was about to say that. You're not going to see it. I mean, you'll hear about it probably on the news. And, I mean, then what? Legit, every time I hear, check your kids' candy, I always think of that picture. Watch out.
That's awful.
Well, nice and depressing.
Yeah.
Yay, Halloween.
I know. You can't even trust your own dad.
Well, this has been fun.
I know.
We should do it more. Every season. Every holiday.
So there's Thanksgiving and then Christmas and then New Year's were set.
I wonder if there's Thanksgiving murders.
There's, like, Christmas
murders.
There's
definitely Christmas murders.
Was it, like, John?
Yeah.
Christmas?
Yeah. Oh,
I have a good dum dum of the day for Thanksgiving, and I cannot wait to do that one. Like
dum dum today?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, I don't today. Let me see if I can find one. Hold on.
Get on Google.
I'm going to message you guys and be like, please have a dum-dum. We love it.
What about somebody calling the cops because somebody else stole their weed?
Oh, yeah. They're always in Florida.
I feel like I've heard that before. Probably from, like, our hometown. Oh. We'd be shocked.
I believe this one happened Halloween of last year.
There's no, like, October 31st. Headline?
Yeah, it's just, it says read more. Let me see.
Oh.
We wasn't expecting that. Okay. Florida man arrested after throwing glass eye at a doctor and nurse, police say.
Now you have to show the picture.
And here's the picture.
Oh, okay. Well, my stepmom has a glass eye.
Took it out.
Wait, yes, he took his own eye out and threw it.
I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I took it right out and threw it out.
Yes.
Can you take your eyeball out?
Like a real eyeball?
Or glass one? Like, can you just like scoop it out of your eye? I don't think so.
I don't know, but he. He was in the emergency room and pulled his glass eye out and threw it at a doctor and nurse. So I don't know if they were like beside each other and just kind of threw it at each other or ran and got it and threw it again.
That's nasty.
Yeah, I don't like looking at that picture. It looks gross. So when hospital staff asked him not to take out the eye, Dorsey said, I can do whatever I want, I feel like doing, the police said. Authorities added a charge for battery on emergency medical care provider. Dorsey is being held on a $25,000 bail for domestic battery count, another $5,000 for a glass eye battery charge.
What?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that was
funny. I love it.
Well,
I asked myself.
I guess because, you know, you would get an additional charge if you was to spit on an officer, or you would get arrested for
fluid.
Yeah, you would get an additional $5,000 for any bodily fluids, like if you
spit. What if I accidentally nodded on them?
Like anything like that. Yeah. I've heard about it. I literally have.
Awful.
I've heard it all. I've heard inmates peeing on officers. I've heard it all. So the glass eye charge, I wasn't expecting to see that, but it does make sense because it's, I guess, a body part.
Oh, weird.
So here's our dumb dumb. Do not take your eye out and throw it at people.